Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed, and this particular episode is one of our deep dives. We're going to dive deep into our own special memories of the special editions on their big anniversary times. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Napsok. I love special anniversary times, and I love the special editions, and I love my special memories. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, the title of this episode of the podcast has special in it twice, so we're really setting a bar high for ourselves. And before we see if we can clear our own bar, we want to let you know that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. This week, we are continuing to recommend the new High Republic adventure, Midnight Horizon by Daniel Jose Older. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/4center. But there is still more.
There is another offer. Inside Editions, publisher of a ton of great Star Wars books, is offering 35% off across their website if you use this special link. InsideEditions.com/discount/FC35. This week, we're recommending the Inside Editions book, The Mini Book of Lightsabers. You hear this page? Oh, that page didn't flip like I wanted it to. You hear this book? I have it in my hands, The Mini Book of Lightsabers. It's so wonderful. It's an update of their book, the lightsaber collection they released a while ago that we love here. It's got updated High Republic characters, cool art all the way through it, and you can hold it in one hand. It's a Star Wars research book for you to take on the go. If you want it or any other Inside Editions book and you want that discount, use the link insideeditions.com/discount/FC35. Joseph.
Oh, I love that little book. I'm fascinated with the fact that it's little. I'm going to think of it as a coffee table book you can put on the coffee table in your dollhouse. And it's just a massive book in your Dreamhouse dollhouse coffee table.
And it's so tiny, but they've got one coming out that's even tinier that we can't wait to discuss as well that I have in my hands right now.
Unbelievably tiny. Listen to that.
Yeah, hear that tininess? There it is. You could put this with a ferret and it would look like it's a book, a big book for a ferret to hold. That's how tiny it is.
A big book for a ferret. Well, welcome to 4Center ASMR where Ken just flips pages at you. It's really relaxing.
Here, I got some scissors for you.
There we go. All right. We're going to get into this before we just start making random noises. Here's my pocket knife. The knife pulling out. Anyway, we are going to get into this. It is time for some memories that we find special, but perhaps just like the special editions, they might be controversial. We've done a couple episodes like this where we'll definitely share some opinions, some maybe even analyzing of the Star Wars text like we always do. But our main focus is to just travel back in time and relive that experience that we lived through at the age that we lived through. And if you as a listener want to send in some thoughts of how you experienced it, whenever you experienced it, that's great, too. We love hearing about everybody's different perspectives and the different ways you experience Star Wars based on where you are in your life. But before we dive in, here's just some basic information. 25 years ago, in early 1997, the special editions of the original trilogy were released. The releases were heavily advertised. A New Hope was released on January 31st, 1997. Empire Strikes Back was released on February 21st, 1997. And Return of the Jedi, it was scheduled to release on March 7th, 1997, but it got bumped back to March 14th because the first two were still raking in the big bucks. The three films made $252 million in the domestic release, $220 million overseas, for a worldwide total of $472 million. Back then, 1997 dollars. Not too shabby. I had to do that research because I wanted to just kind of have the facts out there, Ken. But also, I didn't trust my memory. I thought that Return of the Jedi got bumped much farther than that in my memory.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, no, you're right. It just was so crazy. Like, what? But the trailer said that. And then again, on March 7th, like, what are we doing? Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember it being a surprise that they were making as much money. Like, to live it at the time, it was like, this is shocking. There's 20-year-old movies making a ton of money. What's that? And in the dead part of the season, right? This is not blockbuster times, January, February, March.
Oh, no, this was junk pile season back in the day, and that's changed in a lot of ways, including don't ever release a movie in December, right? a lot of that's changed over the last few years. Star Wars having a big part to do with that as well. But yeah, you're right. Like, to go to a movie theater in February? Come on. Yeah.
Yeah, and just 1 month after the other, just keep coming back to the movie theater for more of the space movies? All right, weirdos. But let's dive into our memories. In 1997, Ken, at the time of the release of these special editions, where were you in life? What was your relationship with Star Wars?
So at this time, it'd be about 2021, coming up on 22 fast, I think. And I was in radio. I'd started my radio career by this point. And I'm putting this in with capital letters, my professional entertainment career. I was a local radio man as a kid with a long hair and a big beard. And I was trying to be an adult, right? I was trying to be. Still living at home, still dreaming about one day getting to LA. And this was that era, and you and I are probably going to refer to it a lot, of just, you know, talking about this being Star Wars and other things, talking about it in public was still a nerd thing. And I had spent, I'd spent 2 years around film school folks prior to this, 94, 95, 96, community college days. I was studying screenwriting, film production, all that kind of stuff. And I was around film nerds who love Star Wars. So that was refreshing. Here I was back in the world. And it felt like I had to choose what specific world I wanted to be in, right? Do I like music? Am I a rocker? Do I like that? Do I like sports? Because I like sports. Am I a sports guy? Or do I like nerd stuff? Choose one. It was like that was the message. Choose one, and definitely choose the one that isn't the kid stuff. was kind of the prevailing theme of the day. And that's where I was, both physically in my hometown of Rio Grande, California, Pismo Beach area. And that's when these movies dropped during that era of my life.
Excellent. So you were poised to have a reawakening.
Yeah, look, by this time, a friend of mine named Megan, she was the night DJ, I was the morning show team. I had a Star Wars Monopoly game, the same one that you, Jennifer, and I played on our YouTube video for our thing. And we would play it every night at the radio station. She was a Star Wars fan. I was a Star Wars fan. I was playing TIE Fighter on the family PCs. But it just was different. I was ready for Star Wars to explode back in this way.
Yeah. Okay, so you were excited for it. It wasn't like a crisis.
Not at all. It was like, great. I secretly love this stuff. Not so secretly, but yeah, secretly love this stuff.
Yeah, but weren't making it a part of your day-to-day.
No, I couldn't. If I mentioned it on radio, that meant I was, set up for nerd jokes.
Right. Okay.
You know?
Yeah. No, it was a different time. Yeah. And I think that kind of figures into my memories as well. I was still in college in 1997, really wanting to be done with it, going to a University of Minnesota, learned a lot of great things. But by then, I had started going to college to get my degree in visual art and painting and drawing. So I had lots of painting and drawing classes, and I loved that. But kind of the trajectory of my life was I discovered that in those painting and drawing classes, you would have parts of the class where you painted, and then everybody would put up their paintings, and you'd go around the room discussing them. And I didn't realize it at the time. I would basically paint something so I could try to do a stand-up routine about it and get laughs. And during college kind of segued into performing lots of sketch and improv comedy in theaters, in theatrical settings. So then I met a lot of people doing sketch and improv comedy, and a lot of those people were like all in nerds, right? Like this, here's, do you also have the secret ring?
Right.
That means that, you've not only are willing to openly talk about Star Wars and have posters on the rooms of your adult bedrooms of superheroes, but you'll even talk about Doctor Who. Like, you'll go into the deep stuff. You know some Klingon. Like, and it was like, all right, found my people, from both comedy and the nerd perspective. But a lot of my relationship with it was, hey, this is great that I get to bring Star Wars into my life a little bit, because it would come into sketch and comedy shows a lot of it was, let's joke about being nerds. And in fact, I remember the actual date in December of 1996. So right before the special editions, I had a kind of recurring Saturday Night Live, like, this is my character that I do, who is a super weirdo, but also a nerd. And I think the sketch was like Santa was real and could give this character anything he wanted, including like power and respect. And the joke was what he wanted was a cardboard cutout standee of Princess Leia, which I did not have a lot of money, but I went and spent money on that because I could write it off on my taxes because it was in the comedy show. And then that, standee lived with me for many years, still in my storage shed, but I bought it for the comedy sketch. So it was on that line of like, it gets to be part of my life, but it's in my life because I'm kind of making fun of being a nerd. So
yeah,
still this tension, And then I had a couple friends I could talk to about action figures, but the Power of the Force line coming back, my connection with Star Wars had always been so much about the action figures, collecting that line, being excited about what was coming next. I feel like that was a huge reawakening of my fandom, and that really funneled into the excitement that came with the special editions.
Yeah, it was an exciting time to be a nerd. We just maybe didn't fully know how exciting it was about to get.
Exactly. It was exciting, and yet still a little shameful is what you and I are both saying.
Yeah, I mean,
culturally at the time.
Yeah, no, look, different times, and I'm glad it's gotten better. And it's
gotten better and very different, very different.
Always striving for more perfection, more inclusion, and make sure Star Wars is the best for everybody. But yeah, that was a time, man. That was a time.
Yeah. So you and I were in a similar place where we were kind of taking a half a step into being full adults, but maybe not fully there yet.
Right,
did Star Wars being 20 years old make you feel old at all? What did it make you feel about the passage of time?
This is a great question. I'm glad you asked this, because no, it didn't make me feel old. Time was working in a different way for me then, right? Again, 20, 21, 22 range. age is a weird thing. Time is a different thing. And Star Wars was from another era, even though I was in that era and watched it as a kid. I always say that pre-1987 is like ancient pop culture stuff to me. Everything from 87 on, I kind of really remember actively being a part of, right? It's my dividing line. So even though I actively was part of Star Wars and actively bought the figures and saw the movies and all that kind of stuff, it was way in the distant past. So I didn't view it as nostalgia. I didn't view it as, whoa, 20 years, man. Joshua Tree is farther from us than Sergeant Pepper was from Joshua Tree, man. Like, I none of that. It was just like, yeah, Star Wars. It kind of never really left my life. So it's always there. So I did not have that, oh my gosh, I'm old feeling.
No, I didn't either. And I think that is just our perception of time, right? I was still like, I want time to move fast so I can really grab the reins of my life, right? And at that age, I was too young to understand how quickly 20 years old will become 40 years old. And now it feels like a blink of the eye. And I think that is just the way we perceive time. And yeah, I wanted to ask this to see if you experienced it any differently. And for me, it felt more like, great. I've always wanted to relate to moments like Obi-Wan saying that was a long time ago, because I thought it'd make me feel like I've been here for a while. Now I have life experiences. This makes me a serious, you know, important person when you can go, wow, happened a long time ago, man. That was in the past. I haven't seen you in 7 years. All those things always sounded cool to me.
Yeah.
So this felt cool to me. Like, yeah, 20 years ago, man. It's been that long. It's been that long, Star Wars. And there was so many debates about nostalgia. I was thinking about that. I'm sure people older than me might have been like, ugh, we already did this. What movie theaters bringing back things? This is nostalgia. Maybe that conversation happened with older people. But from my perspective at the time, it felt so new. It was a novel thing, right? That obviously films had come back many times. Star Wars had come back, you know, throughout the run of the original trilogy. James Bond movies often came back, you know, in the UK every time there was a new Bond movie. So it wasn't entirely new. But this whole, like, we're celebrating the 20th anniversary by entirely re-releasing a trilogy felt new, and the technology felt new, right?
Yeah.
I think the fact that was a lot of the discussion of, it's not just we're re-releasing them for nostalgia, like we're freshening them up. There's things that we can do now with technology that we couldn't do before. In contrast to nostalgia, it felt like the dawn of a new age of tech, you know, going from T2 to Jurassic Park to now this, it felt like on this precipice of pretty soon anything is going to be possible. And we're still, you know, experiencing that.
I think, yeah, no, absolutely. Look at what they can do with Grogu, right? Yeah, and I think that's a great point around it, why it wasn't lost in nostalgia at that point or felt older. Because, you're right, it was this literally advertised, the whole see it again for the first time with a few added surprises. I mean, was mind-blowing at the time. Tech was just growing. And of course, you look back and the tech is not as good now. Of course, that's how it works. But I think we all were more focused on that. It was an opening of a door to a new era to me. Because we're going to talk about later, but you know, the rumors of more films coming, all that kind of stuff work. Yeah, that it was all a swirling. You know, by early as 1994, ads, film magazines talking about new Star Wars movies. And in fact, George had already grabbed that yellow pad of paper and was writing them. This we know now. But back then, I didn't, you know, you're not plugged into the daily news cycle like you are now. So it was, I think that's a great point. New technology, new looks, modern times, and Star Wars is going to enter it.
Yeah. So it was an exciting time. What are your memories of seeing A New Hope in theaters? I think you've told me a story before about A New Hope. So I'm excited to hear it.
Yeah. No, and we just recently did a Spotlight Star Wars episode 150 with Billy Patterson, and it was mostly his story. So I peppered some stuff in. So, I might be repeating some stuff, but it bears repeating now for the context of this conversation. It was my first experience with buying tickets beforehand. Like, it didn't do the wait. I didn't have to do the wait, but the day they released tickets, Festival Cinemas, Rio Grande, California, theater's still there. There's now a giant Walmart behind the theater where it used to be an empty lot where I'd hit golf balls at the theater wall. First time I waited for tickets, right? First time, and it wasn't reserved seating. It's first time I had to say, hey, everybody, movie, I have the 10:30 showing. We must be there at 10:05.
Did you, were you online already, or did you physically go to the theater to pre-purchase tickets?
Went to the theater. Purchase two shows, six tickets each show. you know, and a couple of my friends, shout out to Joel, I think my friend Casey, you know, high school buddies, fellow nerds as well were there. My friend Megan, her sister, I remember, was there as well. And it was a lot of excitement. Then I've talked with that second showing, the first movie, the first showing ends, and it was kind of like, oh, we have to, yeah, okay, we have to stay here again, right? And I think a couple of people peeled off and went home, and I just was like, yeah, I got to do it. I'm doing it again. I was overzealous. I bought too much. It's like buying too much food for a party.
But you were just so excited of like, it's going to be so mind blowing to see it in the theater again. We want to have the experience. Like, you just want to go on the roller coaster two times in a row.
Yeah, look, you know, again, episode one is a rumor at this point. The idea of more films beyond that, episode one or beyond, was I couldn't conceive it. So this was, I remember specifically for New Hope, had this, we'll never experience this again vibe with my friends.
Yeah, you know? That makes a ton of sense.
Mm-hmm. Like, gather around. You're going to remember the day you saw a new Star Wars film in theaters.
And do
it's
you have
the same one we saw, but
so you did see it twice then?
I saw it twice that day, early first two showings. I think about it, I would work morning show radio stuff. So I'd be at work 6 a.m. Off and off, off by 10 a.m. And so I rushed up to the theater, it was the other side of town, 3 minutes away in a small town. And just, I couldn't wait. We're seeing Star Wars in the theater. Are you crazy? This can't be happening.
Yeah. And do you have any memories of the act? Obviously, you remember waiting and you remember going to see it again. But do you have any memories of actually like viewing it? What struck you?
Yeah. We'll get into some details of the scenes and stuff.
The great debate of which were good changes or not. We'll get into that. But I'm curious if there's anything of like food, smells, an interaction with a friend, any of that sort of like viewing experience memories.
It was a rush to get in. And I am, this is why I'm so thankful for assigned seatings in theaters that you can go online and buy your tickets. I am a little bit of an anxious seater. So it was a little bit of like, okay, I got 6 tickets. We got to find seats together. And, you know, the theater was, and it was 10 a.m. Like, and no one was there. And even my friends were kind of like, calm down, man. We got seats. And I am, even now I'm not the greatest to go see movies with. Get a little grumpy. I want to sit in the corner. I eat all my food before the first trailer shows up. Right. I just want to concentrate. And so I was a little bit of that. Like, everyone settle. We're watching Star Wars.
No, we're in sync. I like being there early and I don't want rustling around with food. I'll sip a cocktail, but that's it. Yeah. Quietly. No slurping. I have strong memories of seeing A New Hope in theaters. I don't know if we tried to get advanced tickets. I know I went with my brother and who I was doing the comedy shows with at the time, as well as some of our other friends. I don't remember who all was there because it was kind of a larger group. I remember being surprised that as many of my comedy and improv cohorts were excited about it. So that was kind of a fun revelation. This is a memory I have not thought about in a long, long time. But for different chunks of my life in college, I didn't have enough money. Mm-hmm. And one contact would rip. And I would just adjust to looking at the world with only one contact. For large swaths of time when I look back of like months at a time. And I realized like that's one of my memories of A New Hope was being kind of annoyed with myself that I didn't scrounge money from somewhere to get a new set of contacts. Because I just had the one, but I'd become totally used to looking at the normal world that way, but not the big screen. So I had to calibrate a little bit.
Do you like close one eye the whole movie? Like how did that work out?
Your brain just adjusts and it's dangerous. You know, it can mess you up. So I do not advise it. I could have maybe held off on a few of the action figures and records I was collecting back then and taking care of my own health.
That's hilarious. I had never heard that angle of it.
I had totally forgot about it. And we saw it at a theater that was a great theater in Minneapolis. In some ways, it's just the last time I went was several years ago now. In the actual theater, there's nothing to write home about. The seats, the floor isn't that raked, and it's often quite sticky. But it is got this beautiful location. It's the St. Anthony Main Theater. For anybody from the Twin Cities who knows which one I'm talking about. So it's on a nice parkway on a right by the Mississippi River. So you walk out of the theater and you take a few steps and you can look at the river. And I just, I always loved going to movies there because when you left the fantasy world, at least the real world was kind of interesting instead of just like
right.
a parking lot in a suburb. It's like, well, but there's the river and, you know, the falls that are the reason that Minneapolis exists. That's pretty cool. That's cool too. So I remember going to see it there and being happy to be at St. Anthony, Maine. And we'll get into some of the reactions to the actual changes. Mm-hmm. But my strongest memory is one of the first times I was exposed to other people's opinions about Star Wars that upset me.
That's a great point. Mm-hmm. Continue.
That's a part of this journey. And we'll talk a little bit about, you know, specific opinions that friends had that I debated in that. But just the communal experience of seeing it, I had, you know, been watching those VHS pan and scan tapes again and again and getting older. I knew the silly stuff was there, but I focused on the depth of it, you know, on Luke's journey and the pain he went through in Empire Strikes Back and how heroic he was to, you know, to save his father and show him mercy. And, when I had to apologize for something, I said it in the deep way that Luke says, I'm sorry to Yoda. You know, I'd really internalized like the depth of Star Wars. So for me, it's like, yeah, Star Wars is fun. It's got lightsabers, but it's serious. Yeah. It's the perspective I had. And there's the moment in A New Hope where Vader senses Obi-Wan, right? And he says, it's not a presence I've not since, felt since. And then turns quickly.
Yeah.
And the whole theater laughed. And I got so pissed.
Yeah.
And I have a much more open mind now, but it's like, Star Wars isn't funny. Why are you laughing? Like, I got it. Like, okay, yeah. I don't ever think of it that way, but I get it in context now that like, yeah, it sounds like he's kind of talking out loud to himself like a pantomime villain and then turns quickly without finishing his sentence. Like, yeah, I get it. If I saw that exact beat, if I saw Kramer do that in Seinfeld, I would laugh.
Right.
But this is Star Wars. And you don't laugh at Star Wars. You specifically do not laugh at Darth Vader.
You fear Darth Vader.
Exactly. So that is one of my strongest memories of being mad that people laughed at Darth Vader.
That's really interesting because in the downtime between the two showings, it was the first time I had experienced, you know, new Star Wars is what we're calling it. New Star Wars, special editions, new scenes, new things to talk about, and saw it in a setting where the reactions were immediate. So it was a test run for Twitter indeed. And the second showing, that's why a couple people were like, I'm good. I'm going to go, or, you know, we'll get into some specifics, but why did they do that? And that was fun because I just saw Star Wars in the theater. Like it was, that fire was burning and people were dumping water on it. And it was the first time I had to experience that because before it's playground stuff. You're too, you know, whatever. You're playing Star Wars. You're debating. You're snot-nosed kid. What do you know? It's not that. It's different. It's different when it's already starting to inform a lot of who you are. And it wasn't, as we'll discuss, it wasn't that I blanketly just, you know, loved everything about the New Hope special edition, excuse me. But it was just like, that was fun. And then people are like, nah, it really wasn't. What's going on here?
That is rough. Yeah. And like I bought these tickets twice.
Yeah. 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 And it was like, oh, I got to sit down and watch this again with these people.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was one of those first times of being like, oh, okay, well, I'm so thrilled that I get to start to share this with more people. But some of it, I will always have to protect my little.
Yeah.
This is what it means to me. Do you have any strong memories then of seeing Empire and Return of the Jedi, or most of your memories of A New Hope?
It is truly most about A New Hope. I do remember being a little bummed in Empire that there wasn't as many new things, which is funny because I didn't have those deep thoughts of, well, the movie was too good for Lucas to mess up, you see, which is a conversation point that I think emerged. I just was like, I don't know what else there could have been added, but I wanted to see more. I just kind of liked seeing the new stuff. And Return of the Jedi, I saw on March 14th, probably actually March 16th on a Sunday or whatever it was. I saw it with my parents. And my mom was so bored and she doesn't like these movies. And I just, unfortunately, it's maybe she's not shy in saying that either. And just like, oh, this is silly. I don't like these movies. And I was just like, well, I'm trying to like them. I like them.
You had a lot of people pouring the water on the old Star Wars flames.
Yeah. So that's my memory of that versus the first one was, Again, I did not have six tickets. Essentially, I bought 12 tickets. Good thing my contacts didn't break. I would have been in your boat. But the other ones, it was like, you know, my mom and dad and I went 3 tickets. You know, it was a different experience.
Yeah. I think for me, going back to Empire and Jedi, I don't think the groups were as big, but I remember being, you know, really excited for them because there were all the different changes in A New Hope and there was Star Wars conversation. So then at first it really was like, cool, there'll be some changes. Cool. But it's just amazing to see them on screen again.
Right.
But then I was all pumped up for the like, oh, but what are the changes going to be? So I remember having anticipation for that. I remember being thrilled by Empire that I liked all the changes up until one at the end, which we'll talk about. And I remember also fully understanding that I didn't quite that there were maybe some bits of confusion about what was new. Right.
Yeah.
Because I remember the asteroid hit in a hologram joke, right, of the character that in modern canon is now Canon House. throwing the hands up and being destroyed in the hologram flickering out. And me thinking that was new and other people going like, why do you think that's new? And like they had to have the like my VHS tapes are pan and scan and that might not have been on it.
Same.
Yep. So I remember that. I think the only strong memory I have of Return of the Jedi, by then there was real anticipation, like what are the changes going to be? I remember being like truly shocked by Jao Yoz's throat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like I remember as he danced toward the screen that it would really felt like this. It feels like the camera is just going to go down his throat. It's not going to, right? It's not. That's a lot of saliva and teeth. Wow. Like. Even before you get to the discussions and the debate, I remember just truly being shocked.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, we'll discuss it. We are going to discuss it. But yeah, it was a shot. It was a decision.
Yeah. So you had a lot of water thrown on your flames. I had some water and some debate. But what are your memories of debating or discussing the changes? Did they happen just everywhere in day-to-day life? Did you have like specific times at the bar where that was the topic? Did you have friends you agreed with, friends you fought with? What's that whole journey?
You had a little bit of more of a robust social life with me than me at that point, Joseph, you being in college and me being really shy and not going places. Many misconnections over my years. Regrets, kids, regrets. So I wasn't out and about. I just had a small friend group. But also, you know, being in radio at that time was, you know, every day you're checking the news wire, everywhere, you know, Spin magazine. You know, I just felt, you know, I'm watching MTV. You know, I felt a little bit more, had to be kind of connected to what was going on. And so it's crazy to think the Han shot first debate, how big it was when you look back, right?
It was massive.
Dominant pop culture discussion. George ruined them. And I didn't spend a lot of time debating with my friends, like the morality of changing art, right? Which is also an understandable conversation to have around these movies that always pops up. All of it was just easier to make jokes with my friends. Despite liking a lot of the special editions, and we'll talk about my relationship to them now. And that was the great thing about having the conversation with Billy a couple weeks ago. Billy, you know, I got his point of view because these are his first Star Wars films. This is how he fell in love with them.
He had no baggage of what was new and what wasn't.
No baggage. He had seen them. A friend had tried to get him into it. It didn't really take VHS tape, but it was like that he wanted to see, oh, there was some hype around this Star Wars thing in theaters. He went the first night and fell in love. And more of his story is told in that interview a couple weeks ago. But I loved hearing that perspective because, you know, this was the first time I was like, yeah, why did he change Han shot first? That one graphic, whatever, you know, that CGI didn't look good. And instead of trying to figure out the why of it all or engaging with what's on screen, all those things we kind of do now as I'm older and hopefully, well, dumber overall, but wiser in Star Wars, it was just easier to make jokes, right? Mm-hmm. Which is fine because you and I always say it's okay to make fun of Star Wars, poke some fun. Vader says that line and walks away. Yeah, maybe we have a giggle because it's melodramatic or whatever it is now. And we shouldn't get defensive on it. But back then it was just like, instead of trying to figure anything out, it was just let's make a joke about Star Wars. And then I felt the reason I don't like that, I definitely don't like doing it, and I definitely get defensive about Star Wars humor now, which is my problem, not anyone making Star Wars jokes. Is I felt, talk about water on flames, I just felt that ruined the joy I had experienced on that day in 1997.
Mm.
And and that how so soon it almost like was shoving it all back into the play chest and saying, well, that is kid stuff. Let's just make fun of it. It's stupid anyways. And I think that's a little bit why some of my baggage I carry on as a Star Wars fan. Of wasn't that great? That Star Wars thing I love so much is we got to see it in theaters and there's some new stuff. Some's good, some's bad. We got to see Star Wars. And then I had people just like, yeah, you should put that away.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you were feeling that pressure of choose rock and roll and sports and being a cool adult.
Yeah.
Or you can be this child who likes childish things that were dumb and were made worse. Yeah, like what great tension to put on you.
Yeah, it wasn't something I was actively understanding at the time, but looking back and just seeing where we are now and discussing Star Wars and where the fandom's grown. And again, we're always striving to be better as a fandom. We always should be. But I had an easy life. No one get me wrong. But just, yeah, it was totally like George doesn't even know his own movies. What a waste of time.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a big thing that continues to me with Star Wars humor is it coming from a place of, yeah, a part of Star Wars, the fun of Star Wars is that it's a weird fantasy and it's kind of funny that there aren't railings, right? It's kind of funny that the stormtroopers miss a lot, you know, after Obi-Wan says that only stormtroopers could be this precise. Like there's a lot of jokes that can come from a good-hearted place of let's have fun about this bizarre world. And then there are those jokes that are totally demeaning to its existence, right? That it's stupid and you are stupid for liking it.
Yep.
And there's such a big difference in tone for me.
Yeah. And back then it was a lot of it's stupid. Put it away, kid.
Yeah. I think for me that when I look back, a lot of my memories, I realize are moments where I disagreed or moments where my friends and I all agreed that, you know, something was not right. But my general memory is positive because it was the first time I was exposed to lots of people wanting to discuss Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I disagreed with some of the opinions at the time, I now disagree with even more of them mm-hmm. from the perspective of age, that it was, I don't know, it was thrilling and terrifying that Star Wars could just be part of social life, you know?
Yeah.
And there were a lot of jokes because a lot of my community was comedy people. But then there was also like, because we were, you know, saying like, well, we're artists and we're thinkers and we're comedians or analyzing society. Like there was also like a real taking it seriously. And a lot of the Han shot first stuff was about like, well, let's look at narrative arcs because he needs to start from a place of, you know, not having morality if his journey is morality. So like even the criticisms were on like some level taking it seriously in my social group. And there was a lot of is CGI, is it alienating? Is it cold? Right. You know, is that that's where the practical effects debate started in my social group and in my world, where like a lot of the nerd community I was involved in, it was like, of course, this is agreed upon truth that practical effects are better. Like, why would you ever have a computer when you could have a Muppet? Like, that was the beginning of the battle for me before the prequels even came out.
Do you hear people have electronic mail they're starting to use now? Unbelievable.
No, I was one of those people my first paper I wrote in college was like, should we have email? I don't think so.
I have a friend who still forwards me the email that I sent in like 2006 that says anyone that used Gmail is a pretentious bleep.
I'm so sorry about all the Gmail I've sent you.
Yeah. So I apologize as well for the ones I've sent everyone else from my Gmail account. I was going to make a joke about it. I wish I could have hung out with your friend groups. I had some wonderful friends and they're all still around me, but yeah. We engaged Star Wars a little differently, which set me on a certain path, right? I'm going into the prequels, just trying to engage with Star Wars, on that level of what did they do wrong?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And there was a lot of that for sure. I have three very specific memories. One is that my friend that I did a lot of theater with, her boyfriend at the time, he was older than all of us and a real cinema guy, and he had lots of strong opinions. And one of them was, I think he didn't want to go to Empire Strikes Back, or maybe he was dragging his feet about Empire Strikes Back. And it was like, what?
Yeah.
Because for me at the time, that was the absolutely, of course, it is the best. And part of the reason was he thought the Imperial March was, you know, just derivative of, you know, the classical music influences that Williams pulls from. It's so repetitive. It's kind of boring to listen to. And the movie's just full of it. It's just like, it was one of the, along with the Vader laugh, it was one of the first, like, this can't stand. He's wrong. What do I do? What government agency can I report this to? It's wrong.
Yeah. I love that.
One was hard. Another friend, I think it was after the Return of the Jedi had come out, and by then the friend group was really in. They're like, all right, with the site, each new one that comes out, we're going to talk about which changes were good, which changes were bad.
Yeah.
Another friend had their official list that was entitled George Lucas's Three Greatest Sins.
You did pull out the paper. I got it, Eric.
It was in all laid out with, you know, supporting evidence. So it was thoughtful, but it was still this, like, but George Lucas he doesn't understand what he made, you know, that entire thing.
Yeah.
So that's a strong memory. My final one is, and we've talked about this before on the podcast, that, you know, when we were growing up, the overall cultural information that I would say we were being given is that Star Wars was a boys thing.
Yeah.
And I find that so sad, because there obviously were a ton of women who did like it. You know, I have friends my same age who are women who I have since learned were encouraged not to express that the same way I would have not. It would have not been cool for me to go around saying I really like My Little Pony. That would have been, you know. So there's the sadness that certainly that the women of that era were often held back from, you know, fully owning their love. And that for me, I grew up with the misconception, because society told me that women didn't like it. And society told me if I left that poster on my wall in my bedroom, nothing else would ever happen in my bedroom. It was a choice between women or Luke Skywalker on my, you know. So one of the first times that got to be shattered was, you know, there were women in the comedy group, and they were all in and wanted to talk about it. And it was like this great, beautiful shock.
Yeah.
In the beginning of me understanding, like, I always understood that there was a lot of, from my perception, weird baggage about gender.
Yeah.
And exactly what you could and could not like and could not say. Information from culture and exactly what I was supposed to be and what I wasn't supposed to be if I was going to be a quote unquote man. Yeah. And this was one of the first times that it really, it was a thrill. You know, a stereotype shattering to me at the time thrill that this, you know, these women who do comedy and make jokes and they love Star Wars too, and they have a strong opinion, and some of them I even disagree with. Amazing.
Yeah, it's like, oh, so, you know, we work with Jennifer Landa on the podcast. It's like, I wish to God I was allowed to know that Jennifer Landa's existed in the 80s.
Yeah.
I was told they didn't. It was a lie. Yeah. It was a lie.
Yeah, I mean, and that was a great part of the special editions for me, of the beginning of shattering that wall.
I mentioned my friend Megan, who was an IDJ. She was like a big Star Wars fan, but I was like, I got Star Wars Monopoly. Do you want to play it? She's like, do I want to play it? Yes. We played it for like every night for months. We played the game. Like, it was great. It was a great. Yeah. And it, looking back now, and again, I keep saying we're not perfect. We're always growing. That's important to remember. But I do like looking back to where we are, or where we were, where we are now. And special editions, you're right. It exploded it out in that kind of way.
Yeah. Yeah. And I realize everybody has different life experiences, and we can only speak from ours. But I think it is telling that you and I, and growing up in very different places, sometimes in similar social circles and sometimes in different ones, had a similar experience of feeling like this is the information we were being given as young people of the way this works.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have a lot of toy memories related to the special editions, because I was so into the Power of the Force line, and it was so much a part of my fandom. Do you have merch memories for the special editions?
I was trying to really kind of dig into this one. I think they're all rolled into the Power of the Force memories. So it's kind of, one and the same. I just, you know, the 95 toys coming back was a big moment in my life. Once when I picked up the Luke lightsaber, all the figures sneaking off out of, sneaking off during film class breaks to the Toys R Us nearby in Santa Maria, California. So I think I don't have any specific ones other than when like some of like the droid, the fixer droid or whatever, the figure comes out, right? And it's And I just remember being excited about seeing that kind of stuff. And again, it being everywhere. And it was a continuation of that 1995 moment. So it contributed to this, like, it wasn't about Star Wars is back. It's like, finally, Star Wars is around me everywhere I go.
Yeah, yeah. And just with, as the VHS tapes came out, I believe in August of that year, and posters, and like, yeah, it was just around more. But for me, it was, you know, it was thrilling to see kind of new action figures. You know, there were parts of the Jabba and Han scene that I liked and other parts I was challenged by, but I was so thrilled. And I remember the day and the place that right. I bought that Power of the Force 2, you know, new weird Jabba and Han Solo set, you know. And I remember, I can't remember if I ever picked it up, but there's the ASP-7 droid figure that comes with spaceport support rods. And it's the, of course, the little scene in the extended scene in Mos Eisley where the little patrol droid does the, you know, obnoxious noise and the astro droid smacks it. But I remember that action figure being a peg warmer for a long time.
Right.
So I'd go hunting and there'd be the ASP-7 and it had the little sticker that says it's from the new footage. And I thought it was cool. I don't remember if I ever bought it, but it was always there.
I never did. But it's like that. I mean, when you're that's my memory of that line. So, yeah, the droid. I didn't buy. No one bought. Yep.
Now I feel bad. And I got to check my storage unit when I go back to Minneapolis to see if I still have the ASP-7 or if I ever bought it at all.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, but it was a little like I had the Star Wars Monopoly thing. I think that came out in 97 range. Let's go check the box. And that was one of those things, too, where I have a little bit more of those kind of memories. I'm trying to remember. I think it was around the era I picked up my Princess Leia shirt. I still may have it somewhere. It definitely doesn't fit me anymore. Egads. But it was Leia, you know, New Hope, space cinnamon buns Leia with the blaster pointed right at your face, and it's like a pencil drawing type of thing. And
that kind of design. That was my standee, is Leia pointing the blaster right at your face. It was a popular Leia image at the time.
So I had the t-shirt and I remember wearing it, and eventually would wear it to stand-up shows in the mid-2000s to help set up the fact that I was a nerd virgin comic. So even then, it's like I'm celebrating Star Wars by going, here's the shorthand language, I like this, so you know that my perspective is shunned. You know?
times change. So we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to talk about how we reacted to those shocking special edition changes back in the day. I am going to clear my throat a few times, and we'll be back in just a moment.
You should celebrate yourself every day, but some days you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
And we are back to continue our discussion of special memories of the special editions during this general anniversary period for them. Like I said before the break, we're going to talk about the changes from back in the day and how we felt about them then and how we might have changed now. I think, Ken, it's kind of important to keep in mind that there were huge changes in 1997, right? But then again, for the initial DVD release in 2004, and again in 2011 for the Blu-ray releases, and there are other tweaks, you know, along the way as well, obviously. But those are the major ones. And for this discussion, we're really focusing on those ones from 1997.
Which is hard to do, right? Because I was going through a list on Wikipedia in preparation for the Billy Patterson interview. And ones I was prepared to talk about, I was like, oh, that's right. That's from like the DVD. Oh, that's right. That's from 2011. Oh, McClunky's from 2019. Yeah, it's if you're out there listening, you haven't gone through the list in a while, I suggest you do it because something you might be grumpy at isn't the 97s. It's later on.
Yeah, yeah. It is a long and winding road of changes. So it's fun to try to get back to just 97. So what did you like in A New Hope of the changes and what challenged you and why?
So I love seeing more Biggs, first of all. I really love seeing that. And even though we didn't get like Tashi Station stuff, I loved it. And I love, you know, the original Garvin Dave Drace. Oh, I knew your dad, Luke. Oh, he's a good dude. Yeah, I love seeing that scene. But I just, that was really the spirit I carried into New Hope because I also say I loved the Jabba scene then, despite it. Yeah, and does it work then, now, and forever? For a lot of reasons, maybe. I don't know if it works. But it was like proving a daydream I had was real. You know, so you tell kids on the playground, do you know that Jabba was supposed to be in episode 4? What? Yeah. There was a Scottish guy, and he was on the set. And then we eventually, you know, making of or something, you see it, and, you know, it's hot in my boy. And it's like, but even though I saw it on it, I didn't believe it was real. And it was like, you know, that Biggs guy, he's like Luke's friend. Like he knows him for a while. And they mention it in the film, but like there's actually stuff with him. And so even at 21 years of age, sitting in the theater for that, it was like, I knew it. I knew when I was 8, I'd heard this thing and it's true.
It really was. I love the way you're talking about that because some of those scenes were like dreams, right? Because I didn't have access to watch the movies again and again. And my memories would fuse with things I'd read on the back of a trading card or pictures that were in the storybook or things that were on the public radio adaptations. You know, and then as I got older and I had them at home on the VHS pan and scan, there's some stuff I got a little bit more clarity on. But, you know, the existence of Biggs and Jabba in those scenes was like this dreamlike reality. Yeah, and I loved the big stuff, right? Because it was, again, going back to then, had a little bit of like, okay, I'm not sure about some of the CGI stuff, but that was just original footage back in that, and I was coming at it from like, what? These are space movies and they're fun, but it's also depth and like, oh, seeing Luke reconnect with his friend makes Luke's pain more intense. Clearly just in an emo phase where I was into intense pain. It's an honesty of perspective and age. So I loved that big scene being put back in.
Yeah.
I remember being mixed on Jabba, but actually thinking that Han stepping on his tail was funny because it was like a meta joke to me. That's what was funny about it was this idea, not that Han stepped on Jabba's tail and he went, did the big face, like
yeah, been
used, but it was more like the clever, we have so much meta clever acknowledging that the audience can see behind, you know, the curtain in everything. For me, it was an earlier version of that, whereas like, it was like the animators going,
yeah, we know that the spatial thing doesn't work, so we found a way to make it funny. And I thought that was clever.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't. Yeah, it's one of those things where simultaneously it was never my favorite thing. It isn't my favorite thing, but also I remember laughing, right? And sometimes go with your gut before you start dumping all the other things on top of it. It just doesn't look good. It's not maybe well used just overall. But yeah, I'm with you on that. Like I laughed then. I laughed at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. So I remember being torn on some of it, but I laughed at that. I was torn on the shockwave effects of the Death Star.
Oh, you were one of those. Got it.
I remember people going like, that's a good change, right? To kind of make it bigger. Cause the old one just kind of looked like a firework. I would quietly be like, that's why I liked it. I've said this on the podcast before, but family didn't always go to fireworks displays around the 4th of July. It was actually kind of a rare treat that we would. And part of what made it a rare treat was every firework to me was the Death Star blowing up.
Yeah.
And I was so excited to watch the Death Star blow up again and again, you know, to celebrate our nation. Weird kid. Yeah. So I was kind of bummed out that it didn't look like a firework anymore.
Look, I get you, and I'm laughing, but there was definitely camps on the Death Star explosion. I liked it. The reason I liked it, this is, you're jogging my memory here, which is why we do these memory shows here in Force Center. I liked it because is it Star Trek VI that begins with a planet exploding and Sulu's got the ship, right? He's got the help. Okay. Yeah.
It's the Klingon moon.
Yes. Thank you. And I love Undiscovered Country, but you know, I was always in a debate with my friend Steven. He was a Star Trek guy, I was a Star Wars guy, and that classic debate that we all thought was original. We were all fighting over it. And I just remember the Death Star explosion at least kind of matches the energy of that Star Trek VI explosion, because I was always a little jealous of it. You know, we're going in the wilds here in my memory banks. But I was always a little jealous that explosion was better than the Death Star just going poof.
Okay, so you felt like Star Trek had upped the ante on planetary destruction, and Star Wars is like, oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Watch this.
It's like, you know, Brian Wilson hears Revolver and comes up with Pet Sounds. McCartney hears Pet Sounds and comes up with Sergeant Pepper. Like, I was just like, all right, Star Trek, we see you. We see you. And we're going to try to, you know, do what we can to catch up there. Yeah.
And now planets blow up so big.
It's so big.
All right, so we have to talk about what is obviously one of the biggest discussions of 1997, and it still goes on to this very day. Did Han shoot first? Did Han shoot only? Was Greedo wearing only one contact in his giant eye that he could miss Han Solo at that range?
Yeah.
And that's been, I think, fussed with every single time, right?
Every single time.
Every single major change has featured further fussing with the Han Greedo confrontation. How did you feel back in 97? Were you an adamant Han shot first?
Yes. I even have the same t-shirt that George eventually wore, or how, you know, whatever. I paid like $25 in back of a magazine. It was one of the first Star Wars t-shirts I bought. And I still have it. It's tattered. I can't wear it, but I just kind of keep it for that connection. I was a Han shot first person then. And we're trying to keep this conversation to them. Now I'm more in the camp of Han shot first because he's a survivor. It's the connection to Solo. We can go down that path over and over again with great conversations. He doesn't, you know, he knows the lay of the land. He's not just a cool, cold badass, which I think the argument back then was more based on that, right? If I'm getting memory serves, like, no, Han's a cool, he's a killer, man. And I get George's point overall, the point I will say of him going, maybe that's not necessarily who Han was. Billy had a great point, not to reiterate just the interview, but of just like, look at Han's life. Yes, we think he's cool. He messes up more than succeeds. That's his part of his character. He's a little silly and clumsy at times, right? Like
part of his charm. Yeah.
Part of his charm. Like again, one of my favorite moments is, hey, it's me. And then he steps on a twig and a whole series of events comes on his clumsy step of a twig. So Han's, maybe our memory of him was the cool badass that shot and killed first. And that's not necessarily who Han is, but that's a different discussion for a different time, I guess, or you can weave it in as you need, but at the time, yeah, I was a little bit of, what? How could you do that? Get me the t-shirt. I need to tell the world.
Yeah, I needed a t-shirt that said, the Imperial March is great, actually. Yeah, I forgot. I really loved the change in A New Hope, where there were more stormtroopers, right? Speaking of Han doing clumsy, stupid things, right? Mm-hmm. When he charges after him, and there's a bunch now. I thought that was so great because it just heightened the joke. Higher stakes, bigger laugh, great. Yeah, but the Greedo shooting first, I didn't like at the time. Mm-hmm. I'm still fine with it if Han shoots only. I do understand where Lucas is coming from, and particularly if you listen to a lot of his interviews and his train of thought, that he really wants this to be a morality tale, right? And he really wants this to be for kids. And he wanted, even though Han goes through a growth arc, that growth is more about letting other people in and believing that other people would be there to help him and rescue him. You know, that's what his arc is about, I think, in Lucas coming from the perspective of, I don't want him to be a cold-blooded killer. I don't want people to look up to a cold-blooded killer.
Yeah.
And for me, it was always like, he knew he was going to be point blank shot. It always felt defensive to me as a kid.
Yeah.
I've always loved, it's still one of my favorite Han moments, the flicking the wall to distract Greedo's big eyes while he takes the blaster out under the table, and totally cool. Yeah. I bet you do. So it bothered me because I was afraid it was taken away from that cool moment at the time. And now it's just not that big of a deal. Up to, I think, like, this might have been in the 2000s when a friend told me, like, yeah, we rewatch the trilogy often, and we watch Special Edition now, but we stop and we take the disc out for Special Edition and we put the original in for the Greedo scene because we will not abide it.
That's a lot of work. And look, if he had never changed it, I wouldn't have questioned it. And maybe it's a matter of George understanding his content, but maybe erring on the side of caution as well. But yeah, again, a bigger discussion always to be had. But it's just hilarious. It's still had, and people are still very passionate about it. It's a lasting legacy, for better or worse, from this movie.
Right. And if you just want to analyze the text, Greedo is nervous, drunk, the worst shot ever. You know, they've changed how much Han dances around to dodge it. They've changed exactly how close they shoot together, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of changes over the years. But I didn't like it at the time. It is not my biggest concern now.
Yeah, I agree.
So let's move on then to Empire. Did anything challenge you in this one? What did you love? Give me your Empire thoughts.
Much like I loved a lot of, like, going back to New Hope, I loved a little bit more of the Tatooine, the ride into town, the better X-Wings, the crawler. I really, that spirit kind of carried over to Empire, where I really, then, now, and forever, love the revamped Cloud City. I really kind of like just the look and feel, the extra Wampa stuff. Again, there's less in this film. On the surface, but if you look at the list of changes, there's a lot of little things along the way. And then I guess you could can understand that it's maybe a time filler and somewhat pointless, but I've always loved Vader boarding his shuttle and heading back to Superstar Destroyer. I really have. Number one, I give me a little extra footage of one of my favorites, Moff Gerard. But I like it because it's like Darth Vader's very bad day at work. And in the end, you know, he's like stomping back. But when you think about it, you know, again, trying to have this conversation in terms of 97, so I liked it then. I just liked seeing extra footage. I liked seeing a Lambda-class shuttle in Empire. I liked seeing that kind of connection because, remember, a Lambda-class in 83 was brand new. Like, where they've been hiding this ship all along.
Yep.
And so to see it kind of there in Empire, I liked a lot. But now you look at it, it's like, I mean, he just confessed this truth to his son, you know, admitted that to both him and his son, essentially. Tried to recruit him being his son, to kill his boss. And now he's trying to figure out how to go forward as if it's all normal. You know, he's stopping, but now he's in his head and his thoughts going, what have I done? What do I do? Yeah. Get my shuttle. I got to go back to work. And I love that extra footage even more, but I liked it then too.
Yeah. I just have always loved the delivery on that line of alert my Star Destroyer to prepare for my arrival. James Earl Jones just goes so hard on the delivery of that really pedestrian line. Right. Yeah. I mean, it's basically Vader just being like, order me my space Uber, but he goes so hard on the line, prepare for my arrival. And it's a unique kind of Star Wars thing where different eras and parts of Star Wars are more obsessed with, let's really show the ships landing, taking off and landing. You can see the beginning of the Clone Wars animated series commitment to watching ships fully take off and land.
Yes.
Begins here, reinserting this into Empire Strikes Back, or inserting this into Empire Strikes Back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah, I like that. The Wampa, I loved. That was probably my absolute favorite. It funneled into my thinking at the time of enjoying practical effects more.
Right.
Yeah. And it heightened the scene. I still love that. That it's grisly, right? And it's that weird Star Wars tension of like, well, it's for kids. let's watch this carnivore just tear down on this bloody meat.
Yeah.
So I loved that, the Wampa scene. And the change that I disliked the most is gone now, right?
Right.
And that is, I remember this because I remember being like, wow, there are no changes I dislike. The Wampa shot was amazing. There aren't any, we get to see more Cloud City. There's not that many other things. This is great. And then Luke chooses to let go on Cloud City and screams on the way down.
Yes, and the scream is just basically Palpatine's scream reworked. And
yeah, which I had no idea at the time. It was for me, it was just correct. I had so invested in Luke's journey.
Yeah.
And that was a choice. And it's like, why would he yell when it's a choice? Like it was definitely one of those moments where for me it epitomized the battle that people have had over the years with the special edition of, yep, George Lucas, this is yours. You created it. You wanted to make these changes, but I have internalized the story this way, and this new change is challenging the way I've internalized the story.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And guess what? He must have gone back and rethought it. It's gone. It's gone. Yeah.
It's gone.
And I do remember sitting in the theater, again, less friends around me this time. The hype's died down a little bit, even though the film's making money clearly, but I'm sitting there just kind of, I remember that one not sitting well. And again, you don't have to live with it anymore. It's gone.
Yep. And that was on the list, my friend's list of George Lucas' three greatest sins.
Yeah.
But, it created this overall interesting arc where New Hope had lots of changes. Some of them, like Greedo shooting at Han first, being extremely controversial. And then Empire didn't have that many controversial changes. And I remember having lots of discussions. They're like, that was actually all pretty cool, except for the scream. But besides that, it was all pretty cool. I wonder what Return of the Jedi is going to be like.
Right. Because that's the best one, right? One thing I was refreshed. This is something I wouldn't actively have mentioned if I hadn't been refreshed by a list. They changed for this one. They changed Luke's line, which I always loved as a kid. And I think I remember used to quote with my friends a lot. Luke says to R2 after getting eaten there on Dagobah there in the swamps, "You're lucky you don't taste very good." And that's gone. And now it's like, "You're lucky you got out of there." And that was one of my favorite little laugh lines as a kid. So there you go. George does understand Star Wars.
Wow. I don't think I processed that one in 97.
I didn't. Again, I'm looking at the list and I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. I used to say that line. I think it's hilarious. He's a robot. Robots can't taste anything but metal. Of course he doesn't taste good, Luke. Loved that line when I was seven. So, and there's a lot of little things along the way, even going back to 1981 on a theatrical re-release of George changing audio here and there. This we know. But that was when I totally forgot. But then memory jogged.
Yeah. Wow. That is amazing. Yeah. And my path was weird because I watched them a ton on the pan and scan before special editions. Then I got the widescreen special edition VHS. And then eventually I got the discs that I believe were 2006 that had the originals as bonus discs. And for a long time I watched the originals. So like I've gone back and forth my entire life on what I watch.
Right.
Yeah, and it makes it a little confusing. So we'll get to Return of the Jedi. What challenged you there, and why? And what did you like?
Yeah, I call this section the Tale of Two Musical Numbers.
Right.
it's Jedi Rocks versus Victory Celebration for me, and I despised one, and actually, even then, loved the other. Yeah, Jedi Rocks destroyed me then, man, and it amuses me now. And we've talked enough about it. I think we've had enough wonderful databank brawls with characters from the Jedi Rocks that, age, time, and the real world causes more problems than to go back and just look at this. But one of the reasons I say now, and we can get more to the 97, Joseph, is this. I can always point to this sequence and say, don't forget Star Wars is silly. It means everything, but don't forget a little rat rodent thing sang and we saw his saliva and we danced. So it's never going to be my favorite scene. I think it's too animated. I think it does the tech. Maybe redo it. In fact, here's my proposal. George comes back, do this entire scene in the volume for the 50th anniversary re-release.
That would be a battle of the bands.
Yes. Yeah.
Between Lapty Neck and Jedi Rocks.
Yeah. But at the time in 1997, even though I'm an uncool nerd, despite being on rock radio, I'm definitely cool, right? No, I was an uncool nerd. This challenged what you had talked about earlier of no, Star Wars is red lightsabers and stormtroopers and fights and it's explosions and it's cool, man. And yes, it is all those things. But this has its place in Star Wars as well, even though this scene's still not my favorite, not executed, whatever. I can throw all those things out there. But it challenged me then in 97. I was like, no, have I been mistaken? Has Star Wars been for kids the entire time?
Yeah, I was definitely deeply challenged by the musical transition. And I think I heard that whatever interview with Lucas, wherever it was, lost in my memory of I thought it'd be funny if there's just like a MTV music video in the middle of Star Wars. That's what I always wanted it to be. And I was like, no. I think we've talked about it before with Lapty Neck, you know, especially when you grew up with it and totally understand Lucas's perspective of I always wanted it to be bigger.
Yeah.
But when you just watch it, not knowing that from the person who created its point of view, it's less than, it feels like this is kind of a low down seedy place, right? Like it's kind of what we can afford. Like, yeah, they're technically good musicians, but it's this stripped down sort of like, yeah, this is just kind of some music to bob along to, you know, while the spice and the drinks are enjoyed. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jedi Rocks feels like, wow, we somehow got a Vegas act for a residency at the palace. There is an entirely different like mood and energy and sort of real world analog to it.
Really is. And look, as we play Jabba's Palace and Battlefront 2 more and more, and we see more maps and we go spend time there, Book of Boba Fett, though not a lot of people hanging out there yet. The palace does seem bigger. It does maybe make a little more sense to me, but I love your idea about the CD bar. It was supposed to be dangerous. As a kid, I was almost scared to go in there every time. When that door opens and 3PO and R2 got to go in, I'm like, no. Plus, there's a spider droid. I didn't even know about the bomb amongst you. But yeah, and so there's a little bit about that as well. Again, challenging years of things in my head about what Star Wars was at the time or what was on the screen there.
Yeah, and I think for me, that is the big one of the Joe Yauza and the kind of different filmic language that like Joe Yauza out of everyone in Star Wars seemed to be aware of where the camera was. Right.
Yes.
Like who else in Star Wars is aware of where the camera is, you know, like, and that was some of the like conversations we had. But for me now, I think it is one of those things where you just accept changes because changes happen. So be it. I got this on disc. I can watch Lapty Neck. Mm-hmm. But that it has become so important to me to accept, internalize from the very beginning of Star Wars. One of the things that has been important to George Lucas and has continued on with the other creators is to take the serious things serious, but there's plenty of room for the silly and the fun. And then there's a spirit of why not of, I really like the division that I think is happening now where if we're talking about like deep philosophy about what the Jedi means or the nature of the Force or, you know, what is a good morality for certain characters to have, that stuff is really protected.
Yep.
But outside of that, all the surface level stuff, let's have this sense of fun. Let's have this sense of why not. And when I look at Joe Yauza now, I'm like, oh, that's a reminder that that is a part of this, of even if it doesn't always land with me, being silly and swinging for the fences on weird stuff and maybe kind of breaking a little of the surface rules. That's a part of the spirit of Star Wars.
Well said, especially on the why not idea of Star Wars. That's a big one. We talk about why, but why not for the creators is absolutely big. And look, you know, we always talk about how here at Force Center, we lead with joy and find what's there, the stories. If we didn't, we would just do every single podcast episode about Jedi Rocks.
Yes.
It'd be 1,000 episodes of let's tell you why this doesn't work, but you have to move past that.
if we're talking desert island discs and I am trapped on a desert island with only one song, yeah, it's going to be Lap D Neck. That is my far preferred song to rock out to. Sorry, Jedi Rocks, but yeah.
I had other
perspectives to the table too.
I had Lap D Neck playing in my car the other day on CD, which already makes me sound old, doesn't it? But yeah, you know what I mean? Like, you know, we would literally do 1,000 episodes on why this is bad if you get hung up on that. And that's why we always say push forward and find what's there for you and deal with the rest. So yeah. And I think you're right too. When Star Wars, you need to take the serious. And then when you're not, you know, you got porgs, we got Grogu eating frogs, you know, eggs, we got macaroons being stolen. We got a lot of things going on.
Yeah, and it comes full circle for me where I really did not like that and was happy to discuss why it was a bad change. And then I literally pumped my fist when Fennec Shand said, yeah, the Majordomo was singing like a yuzzum. It's like, yeah, like Joe Yowza.
Yeah.
So yeah. Times change. I also loved... I didn't mind the new Ewok music. It made sense to me, even though I liked that song. The new song made sense to me, and it sounded like John Williams, and I liked it. But I particularly liked seeing the celebration on Coruscant and in Bespin. And I remember people going like, did you see them passing the Stormtrooper around? I think I saw it twice because I didn't see the Stormtrooper the first time. And somebody's right. Like, you got to look down at the bottom of the screen.
Yep. Brutal. Victory celebration worked for me then, and I love it now. And look, I'm setting the picture here. Scrawny Ken with a scraggly beard, shoulder length hair, 1994, summer of 94, driving around in a 1981 Ford Fairmont, and on a tape deck, not connected to the carp, just a tape deck on battery power on the front seat, bumping Yub Nub. Just windows down. Me and my friend, who's Gavin, who's since passed away, he was my Chewie. I was the Han. Just driving in the neighborhood, hearing Yub Nub, Yub. Like, I loved that song. I love that song. But that just, I got it. It was, but a victory celebration worked. But I got to tell you, it was also one of those first times, Joseph. We talk about a lot of things that 97 did for us as Star Wars fans, good, bad, and otherwise. This was one of the first times where I had to face that. Wait a minute, that newer thing in Star Wars I liked better than the old thing. What do I do with that information?
Yeah, it's hard to process, isn't it?
Yeah, because the conversation of the day was, how dare they get rid of, they got rid of Lap D Neck and Yub Nub in the same movie, in the same March 14th, 1997. Both of those are gone from our lives.
Empire Strikes Back lulled us into a false sense of security about the changes in Return of the Jedi. And then we were shocked, blindsided.
Yeah. And I think it was the first time I had to kind of look myself in the rearview mirror of a Ford Fairmont and say, nah, I'll always have Yub Nub. I got the CD right here, the four disc collection set. I can play it all I want. The Victory Celebration was the bigger scope. It was, it just fit. And it's a good piece of music.
Yeah, it felt galactic, and I liked seeing that. To get a bigger view of like, yep, this affects the entire galaxy, and to see the celebration and to feel that in the music, I love that.
And it goes to, you know, George saying often, and you just cited it for the Jedi Rock sequence of, you know, I didn't have the money, I didn't have the tech, it was always bigger in my mind, and this was one of those moments where that really worked. I imagine this was always bigger in his mind. And I imagine a little fireworks show in Endor wasn't where the party stopped. So it definitely hit on all levels for me.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you triggered a memory about Yub Nub that, so I think it was in 96. There was we were doing our sketch comedy shows around the university and in other theaters in Minneapolis. And we weren't in the acting world of the University of Minnesota. And like that acting program was serious. But we did you could sign up for it and it did a variety show and we did a weird sketch and only went over okay. And then there's this big sketch where a bunch of people slowly came out with instruments dressed as cool jazz musicians. And it was like, ooh, what's going on? And the joke ended up being that they played Yub Nub in a cool jazz way. And that was like the whole thing. And people like exploded in applause. And, and then like a month later, this came out. And I was like, wow, that was a good bit and utterly destroyed by the new film.
Gone.
Yeah. Gone. Last thing for me in Return of the Jedi, and I'm very curious about your thought on this. I always loved Boba Fett flirting with Rice Dahl Sant and Lin Mi, and given the little chin touch to Rystal. I always thought that made him seem like, oh, Boba Fett's full of himself. I actually like that.
I liked it, and I did not have this deep thought then, but it's like you look at it now, and it's like, hey, you know, there is someone under there.
Mm-hmm.
And he had some real emotions and wants and desires in that moment, you know, and he's a real character waiting to come out. I didn't have that deep thought. It's so deep, but you know, it's just Don B's in a costume. Right. But I'm with you on that. I didn't have a problem with that one.
Yeah. I remember arguing for that one and various friends who agreed and various friends who disagreed.
So it was fun. It was also kind of funny. I don't know. There's something about it I liked.
It was like, yeah, sorry. I'd like to keep chatting, but I might need to point my blaster at something.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I got to go walk into this shot from my 1983. Don't worry about it. Very important question for you, Ken.
Yeah.
Did you ever find yourself in a position to impress someone with the trivia fact that Femi Taylor is the only actor from the original films to shoot new material for the special edition? Did you ever get that opportunity?
I did not. I did not at all. I do remember, though, in 97, thinking, wow, all caps, how do they track down this elderly person to come back and shoot the scenes? Because I did not understand how age worked. It was crazy. It also speaks to maybe larger problems about ageism, sexism, and otherwise of Femi Taylor comes back. She's like in her early 30s. And they're like, can you believe it? She still looked good enough to be on screen. Unbelievable.
Under massive amounts of makeup.
Yeah. And it was just like, and I remember being blown away by like, I thought, oh, for sure, they found someone else, right? Yeah, it's like, no, she's still alive after she shot. Wow. You know, so embarrassed to be in line with that thinking there. But no, I didn't. That is a great trivia fact.
It's a great trivia fact. And it's one that, like, I've known that for so many years and thought, like, someday someone will ask me. I've never been asked, and it burns, Ken. It burns.
It burns. It burns. It burns.
So, ultimately, looking back on the whole experience of the special editions, did the films work in a little bit of the way that they were intended to reawaken your fandom and get you hyped for the prequel trilogy?
It got me hyped. But sir, may I submit one change that I haven't addressed? I'm so sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, I didn't mean to blow past your thoughts.
No. Because it did not. It was a hole in my Star Wars soul until 2022. We talked about it on the Book of Boba Fett Report, but I hated it. Capital letters, hated the Sarlacc pit with the little shop of horrors mouth.
Yes. Yes.
Hated that. And cause we saw it in the trailer and a few surprises. What's going on? And I hated that. Hated it. Had to ignore that it existed all my life. Like there's some great things in Return of the Jedi. Wedge and Luke hug. I love that additional scene. Love that moment. The Sarlacc pit burned my soul until Book of Boba Fett, where it became one of my favorite Star Wars horror sequences. And now I have a different relationship with it all these years later.
Why did you, I know we've talked about this way back in the day, but why did the beak bother you so much? Was it because it looked like Little Shop of Horrors? Cause it looked like just a plant monster.
It was a little bit of the plant monster, a little bit of maybe the tech even showing its age as it was brand new. I don't know. It just did not seem to go there, but again, it goes to sometimes, you know, sometimes changes are good, sometimes changes are bad. We discussed it. You know, George knows his material, but sometimes he takes a shot. Why not? And then, oh, well, that didn't work. Let's fix it. There's something about that just, no, I grew up reenacting that scene on the playground, like I've said before in this show. I grew up playing in the sands of Pismo Beach, digging out a hole to throw my Kenner action figures in so I could reenact that scene on the sand dunes. And there was no monster mouth. And so to sit in that theater in 97 and be like, no, George, there's no monster mouth. I told you, I've been playing on the beach. No, George, no. That is hashtag not my Sarlacc.
Yeah.
And I think it was one of the first times that I was challenged with that.
Yeah, I remember thinking that, like, yeah, no, it's definitely CGI. Like, even back then, there was some stuff like, wow, that's amazing. And other things like, yeah, that's CGI, yeah, and you feel the difference, like you're talking about. So, but I also remembered that for me, it just being a, like, yeah, that actually kind of makes it more interesting that the monster is at least having some little part of choosing
yeah.
who it's going to eat. And it suddenly made it funny to me, like, is there ever a time where somebody just like put sand over this and it's just like, it made me think about the Sarlacc as like a trap that Wile E. Coyote tries to set up for the Roadrunner to just run into the hole in the mouth, you know, this mouth in the hole in the desert.
And I do agree with that. And it's also, it's like a great robot chicken bit or something, right? I'm just like, plug the hole, man. Like, what are you doing? I agree with that. But yeah, but that was not my Sarlacc. Not my Sarlacc. It was a gaping maw in the middle of the sand dunes.
Yeah, and you're so right. The one of the greatest now horror shots in the Book of Boba Fett were that. What is that? Oh, it's the beak, and it's coming for you.
Well, that episode of Book of Boba Fett, I wanted to grab a yellow piece of paper and write George Lucas a handwritten note and say, I apologize for anything I said publicly against your Sarlacc in 1997 through 2021.
Hashtag my Sarlacc. anyway. Thank you for going back, because that was a big one. That's a big one.
Sorry.
No. And we should say there are many other changes, of course, to be discussed. And we just wanted to pick out the ones that affected us deeply back in 97. This is not an attempt to list them all. So did the films work then? Sarlacc, anger and all, did they work for you to get excited about Star Wars again, for you to get excited about the prequels?
Succeeded on every level when you really think about it. But also, I don't have to think about it much. I just have to go back to the feelings in that moment. It was truly just a taste, right? And the rumors and these magazine articles and the thoughts of more to come. And I can't remember the exact date and time when they confirmed, yes, George is doing episode one. I don't remember that. Maybe it was before this. I don't remember that. I just remember those ended. I went out of the theater and it was in morning radio, which is a love of my life. I'm having so much fun doing radio stuff again in my life. But I was like, enough with this. I need to go write stories and get to LA. I do attribute that somewhat directly to special editions. And even though back then I would easily get lost on just pointless debates, which was a precursor of darker times to come, I was excited. And I could also feel like I could publicly like this stuff again, or maybe the first time, you know? To think that there was more on the way, that was a great feeling. And I do, that's why I always have a special place in my heart for the special editions. And I don't mind people having certain opinions about them, but some of the arms crossed, nope, George ruined everything starting their moments. I'm like, okay, that's your experience. This is not mine. This, and then to hear the stories of Billy and Maude Garrett, all these people are like, oh, I didn't know Star Wars until special editions. This is why they have their place in the conversation. But I remember when that was done, those three movies were done and out and released in March and April, 1997, thinking, I need to create things. I need to go create things.
That's a big impact. That's a powerful impact.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think for me, there was the thrill of it and the fun of it and the challenge of it as an individual fan. There was the fact that it really heightened for my own kind of fandom with the action figures they're action figures now from the new footage this is just going to keep rolling on. It's not going anywhere. It's back and it's staying. That was a huge power. But I think the fact that it made Star Wars a social experience again for the first time since I was, you know, a child and maybe kids on the playground wanted to play it.
Yeah.
You know, Star Wars was a social experience again. And now in this different way where this was the first real steps of I think a big thing that happened with our generation where, you know, we didn't end up putting the childhood things away. They became a part of our adult lives.
Mm-hmm.
And this was one of the first steps of Star Wars becoming a part of my adult life. I still, you know, made jokes about it for many years that were more on the self-deprecating side.
Mm-hmm.
But when you really think about it, the first steps of like, oh no, I went to these movies, then I went to, you know, a bar and discussed with my contemporaries who are working in other fields what they thought of the film. Some of the changes and some of them were just kind of fun, you know, debates. But some of them were real like, yeah, let's talk about story structure. Let's talk about the way a camera is used. And they were like really discussing Star Wars in an adult way that became a part of my adult life. A lot of that experience was you can see the steps between that and today we're talking about Star Wars is a real big part of my adult life.
Thankfully. Yeah. Fortunately. Yeah. No, that's a great thing to bring up too. Just as I'm, you know, saying it inspired me to tell stories, but just to have those conversations and it's easy to say, I think it's also easy to make fun of. Oh, it made me feel like a kid again. I just don't think that by itself is inherently bad, right?
No.
Yeah, I've seen some dirt slung at that kind of thinking. And yes, you know, arrested development or, you know, lack of growth, that's maybe what you're hitting at, but that's not what that statement meant. But to what you're saying, Joseph, is like, it made me feel like a kid again, this thing I loved as a kid, but I now no longer have to put it aside and I can now apply it to my adult life, both of what inspires me to do what the thing did. And I think that's the great value in it there.
Yeah, absolutely. And final memory for me is not really about the movies, but the VHS set.
I
think it came out in August of 97. I looked it up. And I watched those a lot and they had the little teaser at the beginning and they talked a little bit about the technology, but I believe it was Dennis Muren. Mm-hmm. This is the first time I was really kind of hearing the names of some of the behind the scenes people on the special effects. I'm paraphrasing because I haven't watched it in forever, but there's that moment where Dennis Muren was like, and it allowed us to do lots of things to get us ready for the prequels. And I always remember the way he said it. I don't remember exactly when I was made aware of the prequels are for sure happening.
Yeah.
That moment of Dennis Muren's weird little the prequels. That's to me, that was the years between 97 and 99 of watching that clip again and again going, oh boy, the prequels, the Star Wars is not going anywhere.
Yeah. Ah, that's awesome.
It was very, very Muren. Good. Happy memory.
Mm-hmm.
Final question is one you already hinted at, but what would you want to see released in theaters
right.
for the 50th anniversary of the original Star Wars film?
I think it's a gamified answer. Put them in theaters as they are now. Okay. Right now, the 2019 version, I guess you could say, with McClunky, put them all in there, but let George make one sneaky change in each of the films and we have to find them. We don't know.
Make a game of it.
Come out. Did you guess? I'd be happy with that. But other than that, 50th, if they were to do something like that, I have no problem with them. I wouldn't expect major tweaks. And I imagine George would have to have some kind of say in it, but just like if there's, hey, we're smoothed out some lines and there's this and that. That's a lot of the changes that when you go through the list, you know, just do a cleaned up version. But again, to go to a theater again and experience that stuff, experience those movies. It's a lot of fun. I got to do it in August of 2019 for the Central Coast Film Society. They put up a showing of A New Hope. It was a Lucasfilm approved event, which they talk about paperwork and hoops to go through. Let me tell you. And it was a great event. And, you know, Local 501st came out and everything. And it was not a movie theater, but like a theater, bigger, kind of a big performing arts center. So it wasn't as intimate, but also not unlike the big 400 seat theaters we have now in big blockbuster theaters. But it was just fun, man. And 300 plus people came out to just see Star Wars, A New Hope. On a screen that could not fit in their living room. And that's always fun. So 50th, bring it on any way, shape or form.
Yeah, no, I saw Empire Strikes Back at a big outdoor theater here in Los Angeles. It was absolutely great to see with an audience. So yeah, I would love to just release the current version of A New Hope. I know there are all the debates about, you know, the availability of the original versions, if they'll ever be available, if they legally can be. I kind of go in the camp of I respect that Lucas wants the versions that he feels are the final versions for him to be available. I'd be happy if the originals were available in some sort of archival way so that they exist as a part of history. But I get where Lucas is coming from, that he wants to say, here's what I'm putting forward. Sounds like that's probably in some ink, in some contracts. So there's a part of me that was like, oh, that'd be kind of fascinating for the 50th anniversary to put the, you know, totally original, doesn't even say A New Hope, you know, version of Star Wars in the theater. But then it would really, you know, rip open all those debates and discussions, right?
Right.
So I kind of want a just to release the current version of A New Hope. I want there to be a filmed introduction from Lucas and just see what in the world he says about A New Hope, the 50th anniversary, you know, because he's such as well as a, you know, a great creator, such a character. And, you know, so many things stay very consistent with him. But he also, like everybody else, has evolving perspectives. So what would he say
if there's a massive re-release of A New Hope for the 50th anniversary, what would he say is a little trailer at the beginning of it? And then the other big thing I want is I want to hear McClunky in Dolby surround sound or Atmos, whatever the latest is. I want to hear McClunky so hard that I can feel the punch in my sternum. McClunky.
McClunky in the whole theater. Cheers.
Yeah. Add extra reverb and bass on McClunky.
I love what you said about George coming out because, yeah, 50 years on, he might just be like, I did a nursery rhyme and it's still around. What? Like he might not, or he might just be like, yes, I'm so happy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Depends on what Sbarro food court food he had that day.
But I know the flannel would be glorious in high resolution. So yeah, that would be great. As always, when we talk about special memories, well, whenever we talk, it is from our perspective. But the special memories, really, these episodes are about us really looking at what we experienced based on our age, our life choices, all those things. So we understand people listening will have a lot of different takes, and some of this special edition stuff always gets into really deep, important cultural discussions about the ownership of stories between audience and creator. So as always, if you're listening and you had a really different experience or a strong different opinion, we hear that, we respect that. This is our opportunity to hopefully share memories from our perspectives. Any final thoughts, Ken?
No, well said indeed. And yeah, I champion the special edition films. Doesn't mean I champion every change and can understand all the conversations, but these are a part of the Star Wars story. They're part of what brought many to the Star Wars party. And that's why I always have great, great fond memories of them. Plus, I got to buy 12 tickets on one day to see Star Wars, and I'll always cherish that.
Yes, I will always cherish debating all of the different moments of the special editions. But right now I will raise a glass to the Sarlacc's beak and we will close out the show here. Ken, where can people find us?
You can find us on Twitter at Force Center Pod, excuse me. And you can also find us on Instagram and YouTube. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. Podcast available on Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and more. Just search and you'll find us, tpublic.com/user/Force Center, where you can get merch. And we can be supported directly at patreon.com/Force Center. You can follow me at KatNapsok or go to KatNapsok.com for more information. Still highlighting stbaltrix.org. Great spot to go if you want to support a great organization that helps raise funds and awareness to help battle childhood cancers. But they got some big shave events where members of their community, their staff, shave their heads to raise funds for childhood cancer research. You can find a local event through that website at stbaltrix.org. Joseph.
Yeah, you can find me Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can check out all sorts of other comedy adventures on my website, josephscrimshaw.com. I'd like to continue to highlight the organization Illuminative. Here's what the group says. Created and led by Native peoples, Illuminative is a new nonprofit initiative designed to increase the visibility of and challenge the negative narrative about Native nations and peoples in American society. If you're interested in all the great projects they have going on, you can check out the website at illuminatives.org. For now, this is it. For myself, for Ken, for Joe Yowza's tonsils, this has been Force Center.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stephens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.